Jeff.
Hi, John. Thank you for getting back so quickly.
No problem.
Okay, so I'm just going to basically, I thought we could just do a chat here about You Kill Me.
Sure.
Which I finally saw, well, actually only about 2 weeks ago, roughly. But having a history, or having known someone very close to me, that is to say my father, having gone through the program, and I take it, I mean, I've basically taken it as a metaphor, if that doesn't sound too fancy pants, for recovery and alcoholism.
Right.
Would that be a fair way of processing it in your view, or is that just one aspect that people should get more out of it? I mean, that's where I came from, so I said, okay, this is...
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting because, you know, the guys that wrote the script, Chris, who's from Buffalo,
right,
and Polish, had a family member that was in AA, and he went to this meeting, and went to a meeting to kind of support this family member, and walked away from the meeting, and, you know, to his partner, Steve, writing partner, who's from San Francisco, and McFeely, I'm just going to go on a limb, I don't know for sure, but I'd say there's some Irish blood in there.
Right.
And they said, you know, if you go at an AA meeting, you can pretty much say anything, and it's supposedly anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like started, kind of constructing a story, you know, based on a hit, you know, what if a, you know, a hitman, so mm-hmm. they sort of, right, you know, an absurd tacked on it, if you will.
Uh-huh.
But I guess when I read the script, you know, years later, I guess the thing that, you know, I like the fact that, you know, you got this sort of flawed individual and a guy who's really kind of damaged and really in a way sort of used by his family.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of, look, when we need you, we'll come and get you. If we don't need you, you know, drink yourself to death for all we care.
Right.
And yeah, when he's like, you know, when he is, when they recognize that he's got a problem and they try to like sober him up,
mm-hmm.
you know, he starts to change into something that, you know, nobody really knows how that's, you know, who knows where that's ever going to go. But I guess I found myself sort of like rooting for a guy that's an unlikely character, that I find myself rooting for him because, you know, I think so, you know, people want to see people improve their lives.
Yeah.
You know, there's just something I think, you know, I don't know, without being right, too fancy pants about the human condition, that we really, you know, we want to see people,
right,
you know, recover.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of the charm of the movie. And then kind of like, who knew Ben Kingsley would be sort of like so charming at that? And I think, you know,
mm-hmm.
He recognized that there was sort of, you know, and so my hope anyway is that people, and so far I've had a very, very positive reaction from people that have either been in the program or know somebody that's in the program, that it's a pleasant sort of portrayal of AA. It's not, you know, we're not looking down our nose at AA. We're, you know, we're having a little fun with it, but ultimately it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's a, you know, to what I can tell, it's like one of the best programs out there, and it's really actually saved a lot of people's lives. And in fact, some of the people that came to the some of the extras
mm-hmm.
in the AA meetings, and particularly in San Francisco, were not necessarily film extras, didn't do that for a living, but they had heard about the project coming to town,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, managed to get a copy of the script and were, you know, excited about what the film was about, and so they wanted to come and participate in those meetings.
Right. I also have been to some Al-Anon meetings recently, and I just recognized the whole thing, so I felt very much at home with it.
Well,
I liked it.
And was your impression that it was a sort of a positive representation, or, I mean...
Well, sure, it was positive, but mainly it was the way it feels. It's accurate, it's on the money.
Oh, so, good, so, good.
Yeah. I mean, that's the vibe. I don't know that if I were a professional murderer, then I would decide, well, I can trust these 20 people.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's the absurd conceit of the movie, which is why you never know something. Like, it's like basically the world that they're sort of saying, look, you know, it's better to be sober, you know, and a killer than it is to be drunk and a killer.
Yeah.
So that's the, you know,
right,
that's the sort of the absurdity of the movie.
I guess I was sort of thinking, well, at least what was hatched in my mind as I was watching it, is that that alcoholism was a manifestation,
mm-hmm.
would turn out to be a manifestation of his psychology, and of course his profession. And that with the booze going away, and after relapsing, I think he relapses at least twice in the film, doesn't he?
Yes.
Which is really sad. Those silly people. I think they're Russians that come up and keep pushing booze in his face, and he resists right. about three times, and then he capitulates.
Right, right.
It's like smoking with some people, and you know.
Well, he's at an Irish wake, you know, and
that's right, Irish. Sorry.
That's the battle that's raging back in Buffalo. I'm not sure that comes across as well, it was really interesting the first couple of times seeing it with an audience when he. I guess I wasn't really expecting it, but I kind of knew that it was sort of working for people when he's late in the movie where he walks out of the funeral home and he's stolen that bottle of whiskey from the lawyer, and he just drains it, and you can hear people going, oh, right. you know, because you want to see him get better.
Yeah. Now, Tia Leone is a woman who responds to him. Obviously, she finds something comfortable and familiar and reassuring, something that she likes right away,
right.
And as she explains later, I like older guys. I don't like younger guys because older guys are done with experimenting and trying on this hat and that hat, and that's pretty much. I guess she just it's something about the reliability of the guy. I don't know.
Well, it's sort of it's an absurd kind of conceit, but it's that you know she's obviously had. A boyfriend or maybe even two in the past that were probably gay because of the way that she, you know, so she had some bad experiences with boyfriends that were sort of dishonest with her. So I guess the thing that she finds, you know, the sort of kindred spirit that she finds in Ben Kingsley Frank, is that he's honest and that, you know, and he's a heterosexual. And as Taya explains it, look, if what I liked it and she did as well, is that you don't know a lot about this person. You get a little bit of, you get some glimpse at what she says that come out hopefully through some somewhat natural conversation, that she had sort of a damaged past and she's had some, rough bumps in the road, so that when she gets to a point where she meets a man who's honest and says, you know what, I'm an alcoholic and a hitman. It's like, you can't really, okay, if that's on the table, then really I'm not worried about anything else, because what else could there be? So she finds comfort, and again, it's a farce, basically. Mm-hmm. She finds comfort in his honesty.
Yeah. And I was just thinking how, basically, if you meet someone and you truly like them, these days, this is not the 70s, it's not the 60s, it's not the 80s. The way it tends to go these days is that when you meet someone new, you start up on a 3 to 4 month civil service examination program. By way, nobody hops into bed these days. Nobody decides, oh, that's it, you're it. You know, it's,
right.
it's a very, very, take your time, nobody's in a hurry, So it's... I mean, I know that that sometimes when you meet someone, they'll look at you and you'll know they're it. But that it's you're still going to take your time. Nobody's in a hurry these days. Everybody's cautious.
Right.
Anyway, it's all these things are reflected in the film as it goes along. And I was just thinking, there's now two different types of funny that I've seen Kingsley do. There's the kind of the warm, idiosyncratic, off-kilter funny that he delivers in this. There's the self, I mean, which includes the self-destructive funny when he's a boozer.
Right.
And then there's the incredibly hilarious, manic, insane funny that he did in Sexy Beast.
Right.
I love them both, but he's a very funny guy, but he never reaches for the laugh. You never feel that that he's hoping that you will laugh, Either you get it or you don't.
Yeah, I mean, it really, I guess, the one thing that I'm happy about with the movie, it is just really just very dry. Mm-hmm. It is a very dry film. Mm-hmm. And, that's the way it was played, and that's the way it was intended, but it's really fun to sit with an audience and feel right. that they sort of appreciate that dry sense of humor.
Yeah. Now, it's going wide this weekend, right, John?
Yes.
And it was only in New York and Los Angeles, or just New York? Or
I think it was in New York, L.A., a few theaters in Chicago, San Francisco.
All right.
Like, you know, one in Minneapolis, one in Colorado. You know, so yeah, I mean, the main markets that it was in, it was New York and L.A.
This says my first reaction when I heard about You Kill Me and then when I saw it is that this is more of a John Dahl home turf movie than The Great Raid, which was your last film, right?
Right.
Which I was a big admirer of, nonetheless, because I liked the cleanliness. It wasn't trying to amplify and blow things up out of proportion the way any historical war film does. What they'll do is say, "Well, we'll jack it up, put as much CG as you can, you know, make it compete with Transformers." And you placed that film back in World War II in a very nice way that I completely believe.
Oh, well, thank you. It was really hard to do because once I recognized that it was, you know, originally Miramax gave me the script and said, "Yeah, it's based on loosely based on a true story." Once I realized what the true story was, mm-hmm. and my father was a vet, and you know, my mother's cousin was killed at Clark's Field, and you know, a good friend of ours,
what's Clark's Field?
Was in the Death March. I just thought, you know, I can't. You have to be honest and faithful to what these people went through,
yeah.
and so. To try to be historically accurate and make an exciting movie is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So
I bought it, though. That's what I think. I was very, very satisfied that you didn't try and make it a 2006 World War II
right.
movie. You made a World
also,
War II.
Also, I mean, I guess the other thing that we really tried to stress is we just didn't want to have, you know, like most movies have some kind of an agenda, you know, or the director or, you know, kind of. I mean, our agenda was very simple, just to try to make a World War II movie that felt like, you know, it could have been made in 1946 or something like
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm. Sure, exactly, yeah.
Well, good, I'm glad you like that.
So the
that worked for you.
So this
is more the, you know, this is the, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, these, I mean, I've got a couple of black comedies that I've been like, you know, that are in the wheelbarrow that I'm shoving around town.
Yeah.
You know, they're just hard to get made, and, mm-hmm. You know, because the thing about a black comedy is that nobody can really tell, you know, when you're looking at a piece of paper and, you know, a director that's saying, trust me, it'll be funny, you know,
mm-hmm.
people are not really all that, I don't know, you know, it's like a guy that kills people and, you know, you're going to find him sympathetic and,
yeah.
and that's where, you know, once we had Ben and Taya involved in the project, you know, it was a little easier for people to see, but still, you know, it's a bit of a dice roll for people, but I think that, you know, people are finding the film to be, you know, sort of pleasantly, sort of, you know, kind of a pleasant surprise, I guess.
I'm trying to think of the first film that personalized and made a person who dishes out death to others in a professional manner and presented them in a kind of a human, vulnerable fashion. And I'm starting to think, just as we're speaking here, I haven't thought about this before, but I think that Samuel L. Jackson's character in Pulp Fiction and John Travolta's, they played it. Wasn't that kind of the first time anybody's done that kind of thing? I can't remember a film.
That's a really good point. I hadn't even thought about that.
Samuel L. Jackson decides at the end he's going to walk the earth, he's going to give up the profession. I mean, you saw him as a human being, someone other than a monster.
Yeah.
All the way through talking about things that we all relate to. So I don't know.
That's a good point. You know, I guess it's sort of, you know, I guess it's a little bit of the sort of the anti-hero, you know, not the typical hero that, you know, I mean, you only see him really kill one person, and by the time he, you know, he kills Dennis Farina, hopefully it's, you know, for the audience, it feels totally motivated.
Yeah, well, that's something you're kind of hoping to see happen anyway, so yeah, for sure. I hope it, is it about 1,000 theaters? How big is it out there?
Oh, no, it's not that, you know, it's still a little movie.
200-300?
I'm not sure. 100? I think it's, you know, maybe 100 or something.
Okay. Well, you're not sure about the next one, but I just like you in this genre, John. That's what you've always been.
Well, thank you. I like noir.
I like
thrillers, and I like, you know, I think movies are fun when you can laugh at them,
mm-hmm.
and have a good time at the theater. And but they are hard to get made. They're hard to get made because you know they're not sort of cookie cutter, if you will.
The Steve Zahn movie. Why am I blanking on that?
Oh, Joyride.
Joyride. That was really good, man. I was really, really happy with that one. How did that do? I'm not looking at my stats, but Joyride was, I thought, fantastic.
Well, I seem to have like fantastic luck in the movie business, you know. And we had worked on that film and done a couple of endings, and we took it to the Toronto Film Festival.
That's where I saw it. Yeah.
And you know, it did really well there, and we were thrilled because you know we'd worked on it for a long time. And I got on a plane on September 10th, 2001, and flew back to L.A. And then the next day, nobody really thought about movies for a while.
Okay.
So I think it, you know, was released in October of 2001 as the smoke was clearing from, right. You know, it did okay. Mm-hmm. It's done really, you know, it's done very well on DVD and it's had a very nice shelf life.
Now, are you friendly with Jonathan Hensley?
And no.
The guy who directed the first Punisher?
Yeah, no, I talked to Lionsgate a little bit about doing that movie, but I'm not doing it.
Okay.
But,
right.
You know, I the idea of doing a, I mean, I was kind of attracted to the idea of doing a vigilante movie.
Yeah.
with the, you know, the comic books is really funny because mm-hmm. the guy's got a kind of a, if you could get that sort of deadpan, really dark sense of humor.
Right.
It could be mm-hmm. kind of funny, but I guess I started to feel like the script wasn't there, and
okay,
so I backed off.
I also want to take a moment. I've told you this before, and I just want to say this in the context of the interview, that I'm more satisfied with Rounders as a card-playing movie than any other card-playing movie I've ever seen. I think that's
cool.
The best, and I love Norton's performance in it. And I don't know if I've ever asked you that, but I just think that his that hyper-drive energy that he throws in that, I think that's just one of the best manifestations of the compulsive gambler personality I've ever seen. I know Damon and Turturro, and they're all great in it, but I love Norton in that. That's one of the best things I've ever seen him do.
Yeah, no, he was, you know, I mean, Brian and David, when they wrote, I mean, that was their first screenplay, you know, which is interesting. You know, I've done like three movies where I've had the good fortune of getting somebody's first screenplay. That was Last Seduction was Steve's first script.
Uh-huh.
Rounders and this, and actually, as it turns out, this was Chris and Steve's first screenplay, You Kill Me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was just sort of like a weird energy that you can get off of a first screenplay if it's good. And, you know, Brian had been, you know, was really into cards, and he came back, you know, from like winning a satellite tournament in Atlanta,
okay.
Atlantic City,
right.
And said, David, we have to write a script about like playing cards. And they just totally got into it. And you know, what was really kind of fun about reading the script is that you couldn't really understand half the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like it needed a lexic, you know, like a...
Subtitles?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it was like, it was such a, you know... And then at the same time when I, you know, I'd been trying to cast something else with Miramax, and they said, you know, we've been at it for a while, and they said, you know, we have, you know, the script and this actor, Matt Damon, who just did this other movie for us, and we'd love to put him in this, and mm-hmm. would you be interested in taking a look at it?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, it was just sort of like a bizarre kind of like, it was sort of like a weird sports movie,
mm-hmm.
where you're not really supposed to root for the sport, but you kind of do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this like sort of bizarre life that these guys had. And I think Edward was like probably our top choice for that role.
Mm-hmm.
But he was involved. He was hooked up. He was in another movie, and we couldn't really get to him. So we went around doing the casting and trying to find somebody else. And like at the very last minute, he shook loose from his other movie, so we were able to get him.
Oh, great! So it was just luck in a way.
Fell together at the very last minute. Yeah, okay. And we were able to get Edward to do that part. And I thought he was terrific in the movie. But you know, also between him and Matt. You know, they'd go out and play some cards together. I mean, you know, I just thought they had a really sort of great energy between the two of them. It was interesting watching Edward get that character on the set every day.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably the hardest on Matt in a way, because Matt was in like every scene and had to like kind of adjust to all these different actors, and he had a different style. But yeah, I loved what Edward did in that film.
I'm trying to remember. Did you put out a slightly different version, or was there extra scenes or something on the DVD? I'm trying to remember that.
I think initially, you know, Miramax just sort of popped it out on a DVD, and then what happened was that it just became this phenomenal seller on DVD.
Yeah.
And so, you know, years later they decided to, you know, we should make a special edition. So they basically went back to some of the old footage that they had.
Yeah.
I don't even know if there was any deleted scenes on it. Maybe there is. or maybe they couldn't even find them, the deleted scenes. But there were some deleted scenes. I don't know if they included them on them or not. But then Brian, David, and myself and Edward did a commentary.
Yeah.
And they included some of the stuff. But and I think that was a big thing for Brian and David, is that they said, you know, it's like, you know, and I could kind of tell when the movie was working, because the audience totally got into that last poker game where Matt's playing, and they sort of understood the hand, and it could be kind of confusing, but, you know, it was sort of set up with the Eric Seidel Johnny Chan match,
right,
that he was going to win, you know, with this hand, and sort of sucker Malkovich into the big car, you know, the big game at the end,
right,
with a big hand, I guess.
Yeah.
And that sequence, I think, the first time Scott, the same guy that cut, you know, You Kill Me, put that together, that card game between Malkovich was like 14 minutes long, and that's basically, it's a card game for 14 minutes.
Yeah. Well, anyway, one of my all-time favorite films in that realm. That and California Split, which is my other big favorite. Are you a fan of that film?
I am. Yeah. Although, you know, like, you know, it's like, I think, you know, The Hustler is a really good, you know, kind of gambler movie.
Yeah.
It's pool, but.
All right. Well, listen, John. I'm going to put this up right away. I'd like to just thanks for taking the time on
my pleasure.
Relatively short notice.
My pleasure.
And here's to You Kill Me, and I hope that people get into it, because, as we all know, clever, humorous adult stuff is relatively far and few between. So
right.
It's good when one comes along.
Great. Well, thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for your time, man.
Yep, appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye.